Hello and welcome to Talking Trading. I'm Caroline Stephen. I'm about to bring you a very special interview with the market wizard herself, Linda Rashke. This will be an extended interview because Linda shared so openly her pearls of trading wisdom that I really didn't want to cut the market wizard short once she'd started speaking. So we have her with us for a full 35 minutes. Plus, we've also been getting great feedback on our longer interviews in our Talking Trading Gold product. If you don't know what TTG is, go to talkingtradinggold.com.au/ and you'll find there's a monthly audio file I can send you with longer, more in-depth interviews with our favourite Talking Trading guests and the best trading experts. Go to talkingtradinggold.com.au/ to get involved. Right now, though, I am honoured to bring you this special, full-length, unedited interview with Linda Rashke. If you haven't heard of Linda, she got the attention of Jack Schwager, who featured her in New Market Wizards. She's been trading for over 30 years. She's honest, upfront, and gorgeously effervescent. I was quite blown away by how open and friendly Linda was and her offer to help me with any trading questions I might ever have simply iced the cake of the impression I had of her. Get ready to take some notes. The interview does start with heavy detail about her trading regime. I hope you enjoy the best of market wizard Linda Rashke. World-renowned share trader Linda Rashke, hello and welcome to Talking Trading.
And hello, Caroline. I love your accent, by the way.
Thank you. Because it's very different from your Chicago accent, isn't it?
My accent is actually Southern California.
Linda, tell us to begin with what your trading program is.
Well, people always are surprised when I say I essentially do the exact same thing that I have been doing for 30 years. And everybody asks, have the markets changed? And I'm like, there's aspects of change that have to do with efficiency of the markets. But in terms of technicals, no, nothing has changed. So I divide my trading up into three programs. And this is what I built up over time. Program one is S&P day trading. So I usually make two or three trades a day in the E-minis, and I just stick with the E-minis instead of doing the NASDAQ or the Russell or the Dow. It's like pick your specialty and stick with that. So that's, I started trading the S&P futures the very first day that they were listed back in 1982, and I think I've traded them almost every day, at least every week since. So that's program one. And program two, I really specialize in the futures markets. I've specialized in the futures markets pretty much since 1989, because what happened is I started off as an option market maker and specialized in options and stocks. And then after the crash of 87, the liquidity pretty much dried up. And I like to joke about this just because it makes a good story. I think in 1994, the average true range of the S&P futures, granted these were big futures then, not divided into five, was under 3 points, under three handles for a three-month period. And that's when I joke that I actually started trading corn and other commodities. But since then, I have program two, which is patterns that deal with in one day and out the next, maybe holding day of even 2 days. And part of what influenced me with that was the Taylor Trading Technique book that I had gotten to help with the S&P trading, thinking about buy day, sell short day as a very loose model. And I can go into a little bit more detail. The main essence of that is, is it a low to high day or a high to low day? So first and foremost as a trader, especially if your short-term trading is the trend for the day. And of course, that's within the context of a bigger trend. But, you know, and it might be a little bit interesting for you since you guys are on the other side of the world in a completely different time zone. you know, it's where the market opens and then where does it move in that direction for the body of your day. So a lot of these 2 to 3 day patterns are based on capturing that. A classic one would be if you are in an uptrending market and you have 2 to 3 consecutive days trading low to high, and then you have one day that trades high to low, that would set up a buying day the next day. So this works particularly well in the bonds and the currency futures, gold, silver, crude, the softs. I trade sugar, coffee, of course not all at once, the grains, natural gas. So this is program two. And then program three is actually something that I had started in the mid 80s when I utilized a lot more options. And I know this might be of particular interest to your readership because with options, your risk of course is defined assuming that you are long them. Nowadays you have to understand there is no edge in spreading options like there used to be. And you know, if you start looking at old butterflies and condors and blah 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 blah, you're just paying too much in the commissions and the vig. So options for me are a strict directional bet with a finite window of holding time that usually is best 2 to 5 days. And so the pattern that I really made a lot of money on in the 1980s, and I'll say this just so you can see a common theme here, was this 10-day divergence window. So if you have a momentum oscillator that makes new momentum highs or new momentum lows, just in a nutshell, I would count 8 to 12 days over looking for a window and a divergence. And of course, you know, you have to be careful in the strongest of trends because it will absolutely get run over. But those were good spots to spec on a directional basis with the options, just basically buying bull spreads or put spreads or flat out, you know, a single series. It starts to regress back to the mean. That meaning like a moving average, that is your exit strategy. So with that said, and having done so well in the 80s with that, of course, the mid-90s came along. And what do you think happened to that pattern as the market broke out and started trending, making this huge bull run into 2000? Of course, the pattern completely disappeared for about 5 or 6 years. It certainly was not working like it used to, and the setups were far and few between. So yeah, this is a pretty common cycle with all technicals. They all have to be put into a context. Are you in a broader range-bound market, be it a two-week period, a two-month period, or a four-year period, or are you in a directional biased market? Right now, I'm perceiving that we're more in a very broad trading range market, perhaps for another 12 months to 16 months. I don't know if we'll make new highs or not, or just fall back into here and fill out range, because after you make such a large standard deviation move, you tend to sit there and rotate endlessly. So we might be at that point here. So, but that's my trading program. One, short-term S&P day trades. Two, my in one day out the next. And then three, occasionally I see one or two setups on a quarterly basis, and I just do more of them in the futures market than the equities and options. And this pretty much works for me. Then I always had a program four, and that was special situations, and that might happen once or twice a year. For example, a very strong seasonal play or a very interesting stock play, like when Apple had some interesting movements 3-4 years ago. And then here's something else that I did. Now, you can't start out with this all at once. You really need to learn one thing and do it well and specialize in that. And that was what I did with the S&P trading for a good 8 years, just you know, it's really my bread and butter. And then you can add another program and monitor if there's deterioration in your other program, because it can start to be a distraction trying to trade too many markets or do too many things, especially for me. So organization, I think, is the number one skill in running a trading program. It has nothing to do with the setups or the entries or something like that. It's all a matter of organization. And then what I do is each quarter, and I have to confess that I used to do this a lot more rigorously than I do now, but I do the performance numbers and I say, okay, program one was my most profitable program this quarter. You know, program three was my most profitable program the next quarter, and so forth. And it's just a way of being accountable to yourself as if you were a financial analyst for a large corporation monitoring individual profit centers. So, and as we know, theory and practice widely diverge, but that's the good theory behind it.
What's your trading routine?
Well, that's very good that you hit the nail on the head. I think that, you know, we can all talk technicals and setups and strategies endlessly. But for me, I have to say that 90% of my game is that I have to have a routine, because then that sets into motion everything being on autopilot. And I don't want to be doing analysis or thinking when the markets are trading. I want to be there waiting for my opportunity or in a good space to execute without making unforced errors, which being blonde, I am particularly prone to. So, you know, my routine is that I always do my homework after the markets are closed. You know, that means logging my numbers and filling. I print off a trade sheet that's generated off of TradeStation, and I just write out what I'm looking for the next day. That's very simple. Buy day, breakout mode, exit this position, maybe just to two or three or four words, you know, look for a retracement to the hourly moving average. Just a very basic guideline that I can handle in the morning when I have not had a cup of coffee yet. And then I find that, like, it's like taking a test with a number two lead pencil. Your first guess is going to be your best guess. And it's okay to say that you're making your best guess, because a lot of times we're going to change our plan according to the overnight action. But our best guess is better than having no guess, right? Then after that, you know, in the morning, for me, I have to be sitting at my desk 10 minutes before 7 a.m. And that is because I invariably am going to have a technical issue with software, hardware, mouse, who knows, you know? And that's very unnerving to me. So I need to be calm and relaxed and have a little bit of time to watch the markets. And I love watching the DAX. When I first sit down, I always see how that traded in the overnight action, just because, not that it's the broadest based index, but it makes the most compelling rhythmic swings, and it's a good way for me to get my feel. About 70% of the time, the S&Ps will trade in the first 3 or 4 hours based off the rhythm of what that DAX did. There's a slight leading edge there, and so and then from there, you know, it's just very much trying to stay focused and minimize all the distractions in the first couple hours, because that's where the opportunity is. You know, after 7 a.m. and then 10:30 a.m., we've got Europe closed. And that's where you're going to get your volume and your morning trend. And so it's particularly important that you're not looking at email, reading blogs, talking with friends, chatting, all this kind of nonsense. You know, you really need to be watching and monitoring for yourself so that you can see and feel something for yourself. And even me, after 35 years, I will be the first to acknowledge that I'm easily influenced. You know, if I heard the TV or, you know, a person online or saw somebody typing something, you know, it puts me in a damned if I do, damned if I don't situation. So really work hard to eliminate all the distractions then. And that, you know, the last part of my routine, I have to say, is that I have to go out and do something physical after the markets close. Your cortisol levels build up more than you would think. And the best way to get rid of your cortisol levels is to go out and do something physical. And since I hate to run and do anything aerobics, that usually for me means either lifting weights or, you know, riding a horse or doing something therapeutic like gardening, you know, or even housework. I hate to say I find very therapeutic if I can run around and do it vigorously enough. But yes, you have to do something physical, and that to take your mind completely off the markets, even if you have had the most horrible day, it is even that much more important to do something that absorbs you so much you will not think about their day.
And Linda, just for the listeners, perhaps tell them the name of your horse, ironically.
Yeah, well, this is true because he came with this name. His name is Richie Rich. He's from Germany. Richie Rich is a U.S. character in a movie about a young boy who was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. And he had so much wealth, but he didn't have friends. He desperately wanted friends.
Let's talk about some of the learning curves that you've had personally to become the successful trader you are.
Well, I will say that I learned everything the hard way.
Did you really trade during pregnancy and labor?
I certainly did, because I had positions on in the currencies, and it was a little bit of a longer-term position, and I had to roll all those futures contracts because they were expiring, so trading might be a little bit of a stretch, but I was on the phone with the brokers trying to roll to the next series, and I will leave it at that.
So learning curves of
the
Linda
learning
Raschke.
Curve is something that people underestimate, and I have to say, in all my experiences of seeing other people make it in this business, it takes a minimum of 3 years. It doesn't mean that you can't be profitable your first year, but to the point where you have arrived at something that works for you and that you can do in a consistent manner. And, you know, you hear other people, oh, they tried the seasonal program, or they tried this system, or they just scalping the E-minis, or so forth and so forth. That in and of itself takes a long time to figure out what you are going to really latch on to. So here's a classic example. I used to have a friend, Bob Perlman, many, many years ago, an old timer. His cousin was the biggest trader in the New York gold pit at the time. So he was very keen on the markets, and he was an engineer, and he was sort of a surrogate father to me. And he would pass on. I saw him do this. You know, I was fortunate because I had the benefit of a start on a trading floor and the options background. And, you know, trading these, scalping these S&Ps, just, you know, figuring it out by tape reading and so forth. But he didn't have that benefit. And so I saw him, he had purchased Bob Buran's volatility breakout system. And then he would try Steve Moore's seasonal system. And then this and then that. And he went about it very thoughtfully, because he would trade each one for about 3 months, you know, before you can evaluate it. And that also takes a long time, you see. And then ultimately for him, he realized that he didn't like holding positions overnight. You know, he was 70 years old, and he just gradually reduced it down to day trading the S&Ps. And he was very good at it. He would look for those three pushes, you know, in the Straight Smarts book. I wrote about this pattern, three Indians, and that was his little terminology, the three Indians poking their heads up there, and that's what he finally settled on. Now, once you have feel comfortable with a particular market, and you get it in your stomach, and you've figured out what time frame works best for you, then you have to still see things in bull markets, in bear markets, in dull markets, in high volatility markets, and that in and of itself can take a couple years. And then not only that, Then it is evaluating yourself and how you can perform under stress when you increase the leverage, you see. So initially when you're starting out trading, it's very small size. But if you want to make a living doing this, you will need to feel comfortable doing a certain amount of size. And then how do you handle that size, you know, when your spouse is sick or you're through a divorce or your father passes on or you're getting an IRS audit, you see? So there are so many different variables in this equation that I think people underestimate, and then they cut themselves short just because they didn't quite have the endurance to stick it out on the learning curve. It's definitely a patience game. You know, my learning curves were A, you know, I see markets change, things about myself, for years I traded calling my trades down to the broker in the pit, and then we went to the electronic execution, right? And there's a whole nother learning curve. I'm trying to hit the S&Ps and I'm hitting the Swiss franc, you know, I'm clicking on the wrong side of the ladder and, you know, making every mistake in the book, you know. There's so many different factors there, and I'm still learning. After all these years, I'm learning.
Linda, what is it that you really love about trading? Because you started so young.
You know, I think I started when I was 22, and the problem was that after the first year, I basically blew out, and I was so deeply in debt, you know, that I owed the clearing firm, right? And then even after I paid off the debt, you know, by then, it was a couple years later, and I honestly did not know how to do anything else. So it's always been a love-hate relationship. But I will say that what I enjoy the most is I feel like I'm continuing to get a PhD in everything, in economics, in CDSs, in the fundamentals of natural gas, in, you know, in the way the central banks operate. You know, it's always something new to learn and study on. And I love doing the research and the modeling. And I always put that into a separate category of hobby. Okay, because obviously if I had felt comfortable coming up with a mechanical system, I'd be sitting on a beach drinking coconut drinks, right? You know, but it's the greatest hobby for me in the world doing the statistical modeling. And with that said, I do not trade mechanical systems. I love the discretionary aspect of it. But I also like a business in which I don't have to talk with people. And even though I really enjoy my moments like this, the skill set that I've been best at that I think helped me be successful in the markets is that I have a very good single-mindedness, you know, very focused single-mindedness. And maybe that came from practicing the piano when I was a little kid all those years, you see. And it takes that single-mindedness and focus when you are concentrating on the markets. And I can sit for a very long period of time and be patient and watch things unfold. So with that regards, it's probably similar to a skilled poker player, you know, patiently counting the cards over and over and over again. He might sit there for 3 hours before that deck is hot and he can bet a bigger hand. And that's a pretty good analogy with the markets, having that patience. And that's why probably the most frustrating thing to me is I'm terrible at multitasking. It frustrates me no end. And now all the studies show how detrimental it is to productivity. And I do not understand these people that can sit there and trade and tweet and type into a blog and all this stuff, you know. I really think that a couple younger generations were born with a special chip in their brain that I was deprived of. So
how long did it take for you to start making money in the markets?
Well, you know, it's I made money the first 3-4 months pretty good, you know. I mean, I started off, it's not going to sound like much, but a person backed me on the trading floor with $25,000. And after 3 months, I think I was up to $45,000. which, you know, hey, that's pretty swift back in 1981-82, right? You know, and sure enough, then I blew out in an options takeover, City Service. And I went from being up $45,000 to being in debt to my clearing firm by $65,000, which is like, seems like Mount Everest when you're in your young 20s. It took me about 5 or 6 years to pay that off, $1,000 a month at a time. So,
wow.
Yeah, you know, if you think about student debt, it's a very good tuition price to pay, you know? So that was my student debt. I was fortunate because I found another backer that needed somebody on the trading floor to run around and execute the positions and stuff like that. So for about 2 years there, I was paid a very small salary, and that helped, you know, so that helped ride out a bit more of the learning curve. And then after that, I went to Philadelphia, and because a fellow that I was keen on was a trader out there, you know.
Oh.
And at that point, San Francisco had a few too many bad memories. So why not just move and get a complete change of scenery? So I went out to Philadelphia, and I needed to find another backer out there. And I ended up finding these three men, three Jewish men, very smart. Each of them had their little quirks. You know, Nate, who was the oldest, didn't trade, but he would preach constantly, buy wholesale, sell retail, and if they don't come to buy the inventory, mark it down and move it out the door. I think how pertinent that is to trading options, right? If you buy options and they're just not coming for them, the stock's just not moving and it's starting to decay and decrease in value, what do you want to do? Mark it down and dump that inventory, okay? Before those beanie babies are totally worthless. But with that said, the one, Jerry Mantel, was extremely anal retentive, detail-oriented, which I was not. And so I traded for them for a year and a half, again, splitting the profits 50-50. And the good thing was is that they would scrutinize my positions every night. And if I was too big in any one series or had too much of a long or a short side bias, I would get a call. I had to go into the office on Saturday morning and get lectured. And it was a sort of miserable existence. But I think that that really helped me. And it's so difficult for people nowadays trying to start out on their own without having the benefit of anybody monitoring their position and having to only be accountable to themselves. I don't think many people are well suited to that, being so accountable to themselves. And, you know, I know my strengths and weaknesses now. My strengths, having a big conceptual picture and excellent feel and tape reading and, you know, all those kinds of, like, ethereal little gray areas. And my biggest weakness is that I am not a detail-oriented person, far from it. And so I think that's another reason why the money management I was a CTA since 1991 and had hedge funds and so forth. And every day I was thinking, my clients are seeing my positions. Most of my clients were fund-to-fund managers, you know? And those are the big guys. They're pretty smart, you know? And so you know you're going to look like an idiot if you get married to one position and you're not running your program. So even though nobody ever said anything, you know, it was always there in the back of my mind that somebody could be analyzing my statistics besides me. And I would suggest to people that a buddy system is very useful. I've seen this work for other people. If you found a trader that was similar to your proficiency in the markets or your duration of trading, make an exchange with them where they see your statements and you see their statements. And you don't even have to talk about it. You just know that your clearing firm is emailing somebody else those statements too. You know, and just knowing that that's done, I guarantee you will catch yourself in not making quite so many reactive or impulsive trades.
What other advice would you give to newer traders?
Well, I think it's okay at first to see what other people are doing to some regards, because I remember when I was sitting upstairs, I wasn't on the options floor anymore because I'd had a bad accident, and I was sitting upstairs, and back in those days, we didn't have computers. We just were watching Quotrons, and we didn't have electronic execution, so you had to call and place your order. And I remember then we would get our fills. There was a person on the floor, Rick, and he would announce them over the loudspeaker half the time, you know, and there was this one fellow, Bill Morris, and I remember hearing, okay, Bill Morris, you know, sold, you know, at such and such a price, whatever, you know. And so you have the benefit of watching other people. You have no idea why they're doing what they're doing. Okay? But you start to get a little sense of the timing. And with that, I want to say it's okay initially to see what other people do. Okay, this Twitter stuff, okay, market profile or so forth and so forth. But in the long run, you have to understand that you are not going to be successful in this business unless you can do your own thinking for yourself and find your own way, your own patterns, your own setups, whatever terminology you want to use, your own style. And you have to feel very confident in your own style and what you're doing. And so, you know, you can take something that you're taught by somebody else, but then you need to do your own modeling, and you need to find all the examples of when it doesn't work. Very, very important. I can't tell you how much I have learned from studying my models or systems or patterns and figuring out why something didn't work. For example, I'll give you one really quick example. It was it really drove it home for me. It was in the cocoa market, and I had a rather large position, and I thought I was buying a test, a double bottom, right? And it bounced a teeny bit, and then, of course, it fell through it like a knife through hot butter, and I'm trying to peel out of 300 cocoa contracts, which was not fun because it wasn't so liquid. Then I'm like, damn, this is the third time that's happened to me. What is wrong with my system or my model or whatever? And at that point, I realized that looking at indicators or anything with a directional bias does not work in a consolidation or when you have a low ADX, you see. And that's when I started looking at that low ADX. And I'm like, this is a good filter. If that ADX drops down low enough, I'm throwing the stochastics and the, you know, moving averages and all that crap out the window, you know. And it's like, you just got to be ready for a breakout in that sense. And that was a whole reversal of thinking, you see. But I had to see that for myself, and I had to learn it the hard way a couple times, and like, damn, you know, I'm like, I want to be on the right side of this, not the wrong side of this. And I think it's important for everybody to go through that process for themselves. And then I look at all the times that it didn't work, and then I try and figure out, well, now how can I be on the right side of that? And you can't do that unless you're doing your own original work and research. And then lastly, I mean, write out your game plan for yourself. You know, make your own plan, your own business plan. Do not, I see these people and they subscribe to 3 or 4 services and they listen to this and they're on this blog and this chat and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You got so many voices in your head, you just can't focus, you know? So take what you're given, add it a twist, make it your own, and then do your thing. And at lunchtime, I have a little group of friends online, and guess what? We have the raunchiest humor, you know? You need that stress relief. So it's good to have people in the markets for friends, you know, because nobody else can relate to this business. I don't talk about my trades with anybody. I don't tell them the good trades, and I don't tell them the bad trades. I don't say anything about what I'm doing.
Just on a personal level, what has the markets been able to provide for you?
I think that the biggest thing is that I've had something that I could be very passionate about without any limits. You know, and there's good years and there's bad years. It's certainly created a lot of stress, okay? So I'm sure I cut off about 10 years of my lifespan from the stress over the years. And I have to say, in all honesty, you know, I really do not have many friends. Like, if I had to call up a girlfriend tomorrow to see if she wanted to go shopping at the mall, I don't have anybody other than my daughter. But I have lots of friends out at the barn. I've probably spent, 80, 90 hours a week, in the markets, week after week for, going on 35 years. But what a pleasure to say that it's all been lovely. I enjoy it. And I'm sure that's why it's very important to have an understanding spouse in this business, because I could sit here all night long, all evening. I wouldn't have a life. I'm perfectly happy looking at charts and grinding away. So it's been a vehicle, always a love-hate relationship too. Mm-hmm. And you learn over time that, you have to be kind to yourself and learn to reframe things. So instead of focusing on the last trade, if it was a bad one or a good one, or I should have exited earlier, or I should have exited later, or da-da-da-da-da-da-da, like, don't ever do that to yourself. Instead, you want to say, am I positive at the end of the day? Am I positive at the end of the week? And look at, even if it's a scalp for one tick, it's a moral victory. And what you have to understand about this game is it's based on 1,000 trades, you see? So any one trade means nothing. And over time, you will see that 80% of your profits are going to come from 10% of your trades. So just forget about all those other little small wins, small losses and stuff like that. And I wish I could say that I had a great skill set. I really don't. I'm pretty much average intelligence. I just have had a lot of I'm very persistent. I don't give up. I'm very good about pulling myself up by the bootstraps because I've gotten knocked down in the market so many times with, what would you say, black swans or fat tails, okay? always having those things happen to me. You'd think I'd be on the right side of one of these good events one time. No, I'm always on the wrong side, shorting major position in the S&Ps and the Russell futures the hour before the Fed came out and said that they were going to bail out Fannie Mae. sure enough, the S&Ps gap up 30 handles on Sunday night, that type of stuff. So you have to have a thick enough skin that you can go back in there and fight and make that back up, because I think I've done that more than ever getting lucky. So that's really a big part of it.
Linda, we're going to have to wrap it up there. Your effervescence and your openness about your trading have just been wonderful. Thank you for your time.
Carolyn, it's been a pleasure, talking with you too. And I just hope one of these days I can come back to your lovely Sydney, Australia. I had such a wonderful experience there when I was there many years ago.
You've been listening to talkingtrading.com.au with Caroline Stephen. Make sure you are subscribed to this website to receive the very latest market views, commentary and expert opinion. Tune in next week as we've got a bumper show planned. Bye for now.
The views represented on Talking Trading are general in nature and do not take into account your objectives, financial situation or needs. Before acting on any of the information, consider its appropriateness in regard to your own situation.